what's brown and rhymes with Snoop? Dr. Dre.
It's independent, it's radical, it's progressive, and more importantly, it had a cartoonist for 30 years.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I'm Jessica Henkin.
This week on the podcast, Power of the Pen, two stories about artists using their mediums to try to change the world. This first story is shared by Pierre Benou, who is a multimedia artist here in Baltimore, and he works in paint and sculpture, animation, film, and more and more. And his work can be seen as part of the documentary One Person, One Vote about the American Electoral College, which is on PBS. So this is such a great tale about just not giving up in the face of what seems like very low odds of success. Take a listen.
When me and my wife got together, we decided to quit our jobs and live as artists. Live as creators, live radically, right? If we're going to fail, we're going to fail on our own terms. So for years, we would just support each other in each other's endeavors, right? We'd create something. We made books. We made a feature film. We did, she created this amazing all-natural hair and body product company called Oyen Handmade for all-natural hair. And it was so successful that I was like, okay, we are going to, right? Because it's me and you against everything, right? So me and you are going to build on this. So we built. And I said to myself, I'm going to stop doing art for like 5 years, right? And so the 5 years came. We grew out of our house, and we got like a little studio to start building out of. And one day on our way to work, lightning hit a tree. It made us detour, and we saw this building. It was pouring rain. We saw this building, and the sign was flapping, and I got out of the car in the rain, and I was like, all right, 555, whatever it is. And we wrote it down, and within 2 months, we were in a factory, and we were successful enough that we could get employees. And so inside of this factory was a space that I could do art again, right? I could be an artist again. And so that was super exciting for me. But for me, having an art space means connection to community, right? Connection to community. So many of us have let art atrophy in our spirits. So many of us have been raised learning things like, wow, colors, how to count. We learn all these amazing things and are asked to do so in connection with art. But then as we get older, that disappears, right? And we start to become adults. And art is something we go to a theater and see, or it's in a museum. It's detached from us. It's not part of us anymore. And so what I wanted to do with the art space is to reconnect people with art in their lives in a functional way, right? The majesty of art is functional. It must be functional to me, right? So I think about it like a chef, right? There's chefs, and you don't have to necessarily be a chef to make breakfast, right? And that's how I need art to be in your lives. You don't have to be this amazing artist, but I need you to tap into that creativity that's in your spirit to help you, motivate you, and navigate your life. It's so important. So now I'm in the neighborhood. I have a whole half a block and then a corner. Three major problems. One, waist-high weeds and grass. Number two, condoms. A lot of condoms. used. They weren't unused. It's used condoms. And, you know, occasional food box, you know, half and half. There was stories being told. And and the third thing was poop. And I apologize. You're going to hear me say poop a lot. I had kids back to back, and so for like 15 years I had to say poop, so that's just how I talk now. So the first thing I did was, okay, so how can I creatively and magically reimagine this space, right? It has to be something that inspires. It has to be something, if it's an art space, it has to be something that you see and go, ah. So I say, all right, first, we got to deal with this grass. I was born and raised in New York, so I don't know nothing about yards. So I got hedge clippers, and I was I was getting real low and like hedge clipping the grass, which really connected me to the community because it was jokes all day. But they were like, you should get a lawnmower. I was like, lawnmower, I bet. So I went and got a lawnmower, and I didn't know like I know now, but like I got the push, the brr, brr. So I'm outside doing this and brr, brr, and I got it low enough though that I was able to get seeds, and I would get little corners and little spots, and I would put sunflower seeds. So it's just like, wow, these giant sunflowers and little perennials, and it was dope. It was amazing. So wow. Okay, so now first problem off the list. Engaged, got it. Second problem, condoms. There were these young people who were there who were clearly involved with sex work, and I was just like, okay, let me connect with my community. You are part of my community. I see you, you see me, let's talk. So for like a couple of weeks, we just talked, got cool, got to know each other, and then we got into the conversation about our shared working space. So, so I was like, look, what if I could get the city to put a garbage can on the corner, could we share this space in a way that makes it look like a thing? And they were like, yo, we get it. I got the garbage can, and within a week, area was cool. We saluted each other. It was cool. We had a great, great, wonderful relationship, yeah? Now the poop. Now, I don't know how many of y'all lived through the 80s, but it was like a poop epidemic. Like, you remember stepping in poop? You don't do it so much now, but remember like walking and you'd step in poop? It was 80s level poop in that area. So, and I couldn't clip it, and I couldn't talk to the people who were leaving the poop, so I started leaving signs, right? I started leaving these signs that said, clean up your poop, and it completely didn't work. They would they'd kick the signs, and then there'd be more poop. And so I was like, you know what? I'm gonna keep putting up signs, bah. And so I put up more signs, and just more violent, just bah. They'd kick the signs, and be more poop. I said, you know what? I have to make a decision here, as an artist, as a radical thinking artist. There's power in repetition. There is power in repetition. If you want to change the way something works, or that the way the people see something, you have to repeat it. There's power in repetition, right? Even a lie repeated has power. So I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to double down. I'm going to triple down. I'm going to start painting these signs and start making them more elaborate. So I started painting, you know, pick up your poop. And then I started making like maps. Like I'd put three down and say, you know, the garbage can's right there in the corner. Or I'd put something, you know, like, oh man, one of them was like, I don't have any thumbs and I can't pick this up myself. Sincerely, your dog. And I put that there. And then, but seeing the signs stopped being kicked, they started disappearing. And then I saw one, there was one that had a dog, like a dad joke. I really love this one. This is really, I'm letting you know it's bad now. But it said, what's brown and rhymes with Snoop? Dr. Dre. So, but that sign stayed up for like mad long. So anyway, so I kept putting them up though. I kept making them more elaborate, more fun. And it was just exciting to see, right? And in that time, I started to really connect with my community. We had amazing art shows and political events and you know, art events. Like, people were able to interact with art and create art. And it was just amazing. Over those 2 years, there were less and less signs. I had to put up less and less signs. And there started to be less and less poop. Because there's power in repetition, right? And so people started seeing the neighborhood in a different way. The art was connecting in a different way, right? Fast forward maybe 2 years, another rainstorm. I had to come into work in a way that I didn't normally. And I come in and I see a community garden. And I don't know how I missed it. It was like a block and a half away, but someone had totally remixed a parking lot into a community garden. It had a little path. It had little flowers and stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh. I got out of my car in the rain. And I just looked. I was just like in awe that someone else had a radical vision that they had acted on, right? We're in communication. And there were little signs all over the garden. And I swear to you, in the back, there was a tree. Near the tree, there was a sign. Faded on the sign, it said, "What's brown?" And rhymes with Snoop. And I just laughed. But I remember consciously standing there and being so, I don't know if the word is honored, to be part of the conversation, to be part of someone else's vision of what this could be. And that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, I love that. Well, first off, that he's just like meeting his community where it's at and being very non-judgmental in the best way.
That moment where he realizes the signs are not working.
Yeah.
Right. That's a moment where 90% of people would be like, well, nothing's going to work.
Yeah.
This is just screwed, you know? And the idea that he needs to get creative with the signs and keep them coming and make them funny and make them engaging and actually make the signs part of his art, I think is so resilient and so creative. And yeah. So I love that when he sees his community garden, he sees one of his old signs there in the back. That's
the Dr. Dre
that's
one. Yeah.
Brilliant. Which I really love that joke too, and I'm going to use it. Thank you, Pierre. Let's take a short break before our next story. Okay, so this next story was shared by Gary Huck, who is a retired political cartoonist. For 40 years, he was the only full-time political cartoonist employed by the labor movement in North America. And so this is what he calls a David and Goliath tale. It is super fun. So take a listen.
Jack Welch was the CEO of General Electric Company. And in the 1990s, he was the hottest CEO in America. He had taken the manufacturing division of GE, which produced light bulbs, microwaves, all the way up to large locomotive engines. And he took the profit from that division and was pouring it in to new ventures like finance companies and even purchasing NBC. And the stock was soaring. And as it soared, so did Jack Welch. Jack Welch was the first celebrity CEO in America. His face was everywhere. It was on Time, Newsweek, The Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Financial Times. His face was everywhere. Ironically, I worked catty corner from NBC, headquarters at 30 Rockefeller Plaza. 11 East 51st Street was the headquarters of the UE. The UE is a very special union in America. It's independent, it's radical, it's progressive, and more importantly, it had a cartoonist for 30 years, the great Fred Wright. And Fred Wright unfortunately got very sick. And while he was sick, they were looking for cartoons to put in their publications. And I had grown up working class kid in a working class city in the industrial Midwest. And I'd had my first show of cartoons when I was in the fourth grade. I was an arty little guy. And I had, like my brothers, I have three older brothers, and we, in order to go to college, we all went into the military. And when I was living in California, I got involved with the Farm Workers Union. And I started contributing cartoons to the Progressive Press, the Left Press. I founded a syndication with Mike Konopacki. And when the UE needed a cartoonist, they started running, buying our syndication and running our cartoons. And when Fred tragically died, they asked me to come on staff. So I moved to New York City in the shadow of Rockefeller Center. Something you need to understand about how corporations work in America. So if you're a factory worker and you cross the gate into GE's property, you do not bring your constitutional rights with you. You have no more constitutional rights than, say, a woman living in Texas. And so GE was trying to implement an industry-wide drug testing program, and the union was pushing back against it. And I was asked to draw an anti-drug testing cartoon. So there lies my drawing table. I have all these publications with Jack Welch's photo. I see his face on Newsweek. I see his face in Time. I see his face everywhere. And I'm looking at his face, and I said to myself, I know a place where I can put his face. And so by the end of the day, I submitted a cartoon, and it was, the caption is, How to Promote Drug Testing. Put the boss's picture on the bottom of the cup. So once again, Jack Welch's face was everywhere. It was on the hall, union hall walls. It was in the factories. These little stickers were made, and the workers would just stick them on all the machines. It was republished in the publications all over America. It was republished in the Washington Post, because drug testing was a big issue then. And Jack Welch went ballistic. And he mustered his lawyers, and they came to the union, and they demanded that the cartoon be removed from syndication. They demanded that it be taken down from all the places that it had been, and they demanded the head of the cartoonist on a stick. And you know what happened? Nothing. Absolutely nothing, because I did not work on the side of the fence where there are no constitutional rights. I worked on the side of the fence that gave me the protection of the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America as long as it lasts. And so Jack Welch could huff and he could puff, but he could not blow me down. Jack Welch died in 2002. His obituary was written just a few years ago in a book entitled Jack Welch, How He Broke Capitalism. As for the cartoonist, I live to tell the tale.
Gary and Pierre actually both shared these stories at a benefit for the American Visionary Art Museum, which is an outsider artist institution in Baltimore that's been around for 30 years.
Yeah.
So Gary had the pictures that he had drawn of Jack Welch, and he had actually made it so that it was like a popsicle stick mask and put one of them on everyone's seat.
That's
really
so
funny.
Cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, when he talks about like it got made into stickers and all, I was like, oh, if he did that today, it would be a meme.
Yeah.
Right. It would just be all over. Yeah. Just that really interesting idea that being outside the corporate walls allows you to have this freedom that you don't get when you agree to employment rules and, you know, how that power can be used. So, yeah, these are two great stories about artists really making it happen. Thanks a lot for joining us for this episode. If you'd like to listen to more stories from The Stoop, you can visit stoopstorytelling.com. We've also got information on upcoming events there. We want to thank Maureen Harvey for producing the podcast. And we will see you soon with more stories from The Stoop.